The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we always say the Black Panther Party that they can do the thing they want to do. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bad fucking protest in them cities. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around and pump crack right up in your titty. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. It's like an amendment on the fly. Lie to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle fingers. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle fingers. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle fingers. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle fingers.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc., incorporated in 1871. Today's date is October the 2nd, 2015. It's a Friday afternoon. I hope that you had a productive week. I can say that. I think this week has been very productive, but, you know, we're spitting out media, podcasts, doing internet streams pretty much, I would say 20 hours out of the day. So, yeah, definitely I try to stay productive. At least I hope what I do that people who consume it find it to be productive. Today we do have a guest scheduled for you. There was a mix-up. He was scheduled to be with us on Tuesday, but he's joining us today on this Friday, and that's Mr. David Yankovich. He believes that private prisons are a national embarrassment, and he wrote about it in the Huffington Post in an article that was titled "Private Prisons Embrace Corruption to Boost Profits." So we definitely want to bring him on. He's a former intelligence analyst for the United States Navy. So he has that military background, like myself and so many others that I speak to on these sort of things. So anyway, we'll be talking to him in just about 6 minutes or so, about 10 minutes after the hour. He will be joining us. But part of his analysis on private prisons, he wrote, these businesses spent over $45 million in lobbying to make sure when you get sent to jail, you go to their jails. They are so good at this that there was a 37% increase of private prisoners between 2002 and 2009. So we want to know, one of those questions we could ask is, you know, what time period did this $45 million cover, right? So we'll be talking to Mr. Yankovic here in just a bit. And but some of the other things that we will be discussing on today's program after we get through with our interview, staying on the abolitionist message or what's in the news that is of interest to abolitionists. You have this bipartisan group of senators who have reached a deal on criminal justice reform concerning drug war sentencing guidelines. They also have agreed to eliminate the bipartisan three strikes legislation that was passed during the Clinton administration. I'm asking the question, does this proposed legislation do enough to end what we call 21st century slavery and human trafficking in the USA? I know the good folks over there at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, they would say it wouldn't go far enough because we want to abolish the drug war, not reform the amount of time that people are going to spend in prison on victimless crimes. That, you know, makes no sense. So you be the judge. Bernie Sanders said that this legislation was coming out when he introduced the Justice is Not for Sale Act. And so this is it. This is it. I haven't had a chance to look at the summary yet. So, but again, you know, my philosophy is I agree with many other abolitionists out there in terms of the drug war. The drug war needs to be abolished. That includes drug war era laws or drug war legislation, because that's what, after all, has led to what they call mass incarceration. So just because you're putting people in prison for 10 years as opposed to 25 to life, to me, you know, is that reform? Technically, yes. Does it eliminate the problem? No, it does not. So there you go. That's what Scotty thinks about this bipartisan legislation. Also, our condolences. We want to go send out condolences to the victims of the mass shooting at the community college, UCC. The CEO of USA Inc. is calling for more gun control legislation, which this has been the standard of not only the Obama administration, but any Democratic administration or politician, is to always propose more gun control legislation. Presidential candidate Bernie Sanders says it's time for a sensible dialogue, and certainly, you know, I don't have anything against dialogue. My personal opinion, my two cents, is that there are always the predictable knee-jerk reactions in terms of legislation without getting, again, to the root cause of the problem. And so during that segment, we can expand upon those problems. Maybe it's something about USA that it just promotes violence, whether it's through media, whether it's in the culture. You know, but what about health, mental health issues? Maybe perhaps if we had people get more treatment for the mental health ailments instead of them just getting thrown in prison, that if we proactively approach mental health in that way, that we could also perhaps lessen these incidents of mass shootings. So that appears, mental health issue appears to be part of the motive or the narrative that we're getting out from profile of the shooter. All right, so that's what is on today's agenda. Just some quick network news. Tando Radio Show will not be on live today. Brother Dave and his family is in a transition, and he has to take care of some things, so he will not be streaming live. But of course, you can check out any of the podcasts if you missed any of his programs this week. Those podcasts are available for you right there on Black Talk Radio Network. com. Race Treaty will be on tonight. Race Treaty, which focuses on many of these social and political issues from the standpoint of the human rights treaties, the Conference for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. So at the UN level. Tune in to Race Treaty tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. That's live streaming right here on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. All right, without further delay, I do believe we have our scheduled guest on the line. Do we have you on the line, Mr. Yankovich?
Yes, sir. Yes, you do.
All right. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So before we get started and talk about the topic that you were invited on to speak about, based on your article, Private Prisons Embrace Corruption to Boost Profits, which was published in the Huffington Post, but this is your first time on the program, and so please tell our listeners as much information, background information about yourself that you think is relative to why they should value your perspective today.
Well, I'm definitely a different voice. I've been writing with the Huffington Post for just a couple months now, but I have worked in a lot of political campaigns. I'm both a Democrat. I've worked on a couple of Republican campaigns that I felt like the person actually gave a crap. I guess the biggest thing for me is, you know, I was in the Navy. I did intelligence. I've been in corporate for a long time in communications. I came from a middle-class family where a lot of people that I know have went to jail and have went to private prisons. And I've kind of seen it firsthand of, you know, what happens to people and what their future is like once they go to one of those places. So when I wrote the article, you know, it was definitely with them in mind.
So a personal perspective, you aren't just some analyst who follow politics and, you know, because from your website, you say you're interested in geopolitical affairs, things that's going on globally. But so you're not just approaching it from a policy analyst, but you also have a personal connection to the issue as well, as you've seen firsthand.
I mean, the thing is, you know, I'm interested in world events, you know, I did intelligence with the military and stuff. I have a pretty good grasp on what's going on, you know, worldwide. But the biggest issue going on nationally right now is private prison. And from a personal perspective, I mean, I've seen it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not just approaching it from an analyst position. I have a history with it.
Okay. All right, so, and also, you have a website, you are a writer, so besides the Huffington Post, is there anywhere else people can connect with you and the issues that you write about?
Yeah, I mean, they can definitely check me out on Twitter, David Yankovich, David Yankovich, and then davidyankovich.com as well. I'm just getting that website up and running, so basically I'm just throwing up the articles that are on Huffington Post there for right now, but pretty soon there's going to be a blog where I kind of talk about, you know, other things that maybe Huffington Post doesn't want to cover, or, you know, things that, you know, a little more out there.
Understood. Definitely, you know, the Huffington Post has, I appreciate them giving so many people a platform in which to reach a wider audience, but when you have one foot in the mainstream, you know, and then one foot in, let's just say, the alternative media, there's some things that they definitely don't want you to go there. But that's why it's so great that, you know, we have the ability to create our own outlets and give those perspectives.
You know, what's kind of ironic is actually recently I wrote a really scathing article on Donald Trump and the Republican Party and Fox News culture and all this. And I mean, it was pretty brutal. But, you know, Huffington Post usually doesn't turned down too much, but that was one of the ones that they wouldn't let me do. But I'm going to be putting that one on the website soon.
Okay. We'll look for that. Make sure you send that to me via email. Now, let's get into your article, Private Prisons Embrace Corruption to Boost Profits. And before we get started, I apologize. Listeners, if you have any questions or observations from the article that you read or any perspective that you would like to share, please don't hesitate to give us a call. 641-715-3660 is the conference line. Again, that's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. Greetings to those already dialed in. At any point you want to signal me, just hit *61 and that will send me that notice. Now let's get into the issues that you wrote about. You start off with talking about, you know, it seems like it's science fiction, something that you would read in a book, you know, like Big Brother. What was Orwell's book?
Fahrenheit 451. And I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on right now. It's absolutely unbelievable. And when I started researching, I've seen it. I've seen what happens. But when I actually started researching and getting all the facts together for this article, I mean, I was really embarrassed. I mean, really, it's embarrassing that our country, this great country that we're supposed to have, you know, is basically profiting on people's heads. I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, private prisons started in the 1800s because slavery was abolished and they needed to have a new line of people to, you know, do their work. And that's how private prisons started. And we're in 2015 now, and we still have something like that running around. I thought that we were beyond all that, you know.
Apparently not. Would it be accurate to say then that slavery was never abolished? Because I mean, if you read the 13th Amendment, it actually doesn't outright abolish the practice of slavery. It amends it. Because it says, you know, it leaves that big loophole that, you know, you can be sentenced to slavery or involuntary servitude if you've been convicted of a crime. Now, you mentioned, you know, coming out of, you know, the Civil War. After the Civil War, they needed a way to replace that labor. And so, you know, it was officially called the convict leasing program. And so I don't know if you've read much about the black codes during the Reconstruction so-called era. and these black codes were passed, and many of those are in effect today, that, you know, just vagrancy laws or laws that's targeting the homeless today that many people talk about, those have its roots in those black codes and criminalizing people activity and to, of course, replace that free labor source. But, you know, so would you say then that this is a continuation of slavery? I mean, what are your thoughts? Am I too radical or going too far out there for you?
I think that when, you know, you have places like the Daily Beast and websites like that who are saying it, I think it's pretty safe to say that this is definitely an extension of slavery. If anything, it's definitely indentured servitude. You can never get out of it. You know, if you have a record, it's hard to get a job. You have prison restitution, and like down here, I live in Florida, and here, if you have a certain day that you pay, so it'd be on the 26th of the month or the 15th, whatever day they designate. If you pay a day early, it goes towards last month's payment. If you pay a day late, they suspend your driver's license. That's a $500 fine, you know, and you have to get that reinstated, plus your insurance, and, you know, a lot of people don't have that type of money. So not only is it a form of slavery because they want you to go to jail, they actually are lobbying Congress to send more people to jail. They have occupancy requirements in their contracts that people have to go to jail. They don't help the people who are there. And then when they get out, they hope they go back. That's what their whole goal is, because repeat offenders is how they make their money. So, I mean, I agree with that completely. I think that it's definitely an extension of slavery. It's indentured servitude. It shouldn't be allowed in this country, and it is.
Now, you just mentioned about the lobbying aspect of this. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about is New Abolitionists. We actually have another program called New Abolitionist Radio, but where we talk about the lobbying aspect. These laws, like the three strike laws, the, you know, all the laws that have led to mass incarceration, that, you know, these were put into place. These, you know, there was a concerted effort to put these this legislation on the books to, what I say, create criminals for profit. Because like you mentioned, mm-hmm. they want people to go to jail. They want them to stay in jail longer, and they spend a lot of money. Now, in your article, you mentioned, you know, that and I'm assuming you're talking about the private prison lobby, spending over $45 mm-hmm. million in lobbying politicians at the state level, at the federal level. And is this all in 1 year, this $45 million? Is that just one, you know, period, or what can you tell us about
million
that?
In 1 year.
$45 million in 1 year. Wow. That's a lot.
Well, what's going on right now is even bigger. They're investing a ton of money in the presidential race. Mm-hmm. And one thing that was really disappointing to see was Hillary Clinton, you know, is taking a lot of money from these private prison lobbyists and, you know, her, what they call, you know, packers and stuff like that. They're actually, you know, taking it. They're taking the money. The only candidate who's not that I've read is Bernie Sanders. You know, you have every Republican candidate, the Democratic candidate, basically what they're doing is the same thing the Koch brothers do. They're backing everybody. And that way, mm-hmm. you know, someone gets to the White House, they're not going to sign a bill that, you know, bans all of it. Mm-hmm. So, one thing I thought that was kind of brave was Bernie Sanders comes out with, you know, the bill in the Senate when the article came out that everybody was doing it. I thought it was really brave of him that he actually put that out there.
Right. And he mentioned in the press conference that he also gave with the representative out of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, who introduced it. Well, in the mm-hmm. press conference, you know, they both announced it. He mentioned that there was some bipartisan legislation in the works. Now, I don't know how much of the beginning of the program you heard, but one of the articles that I put up for our listeners to read is this so-called bipartisan group of senators who reached a deal on criminal justice reform. But from what I've read thus far, without having seen the bill summary or whatnot, but it's basically just sentencing guidelines. Instead of them putting you, let's say, in prison for 20 years for a gram of crack cocaine, then maybe they'll put you in there for 5 years. And so to me, you know, I am against the drug war, period. I don't think anybody needs to be going to jail or prison over drugs that don't involve a victim, that don't involve like a child or someone like that. I think we need to move, you know, move forward on that type of legislation. But I mean, have you seen anything about this so-called bipartisan legislation that, you know, you said is brave of Bernie Sanders to preempt what they was coming out with? Because from what I've seen, his goes much deeper to the heart of the problem than, you know, this so-called reform legislation introduced by these senators.
Yeah, I mean, for years there's been bipartisan legislation that's been pending and all that. Bernie Sanders was the first one that actually came out and had some teeth in the bill. I don't think it goes far enough, but I think for a presidential candidate who's number two in the polls, I think that it was pretty brave of him. When you have, you know, you'll have the, you know, bipartisan legislators always talking about passing things and doing it. It would have never got done. He basically drew attention to this, you know, I mean, Twitter's really following Bernie Sanders, Facebook, social media, and he puts this bill out, and, you know, that really just kind of laser drew it, everything there. And it actually, for me, I wrote the article, and it was about a 2-week wait before it came out, and my article came out the same day his did. But what he's trying to do, you know, I mean, it's good, but it's not far enough, you know. And I mean, giving them 2 years with an option for a third isn't far enough. I mean, they need to basically just say no more.
Right, right. And, you know, there has been some of the criticism, and others have asked, well, how would he do that? Well, you know, that span of 3 years gives them time to work it out, because we're involved. We're also talking about contracts. You mentioned earlier, you know, the occupancy rate contracts. Well, CCA got a 20-year, you know, contract with the state of Louisiana. I mean, my thinking is, well, if your industry has been abolished, then those contracts become null and void. So I don't know. Well, perhaps
I was just going to say that if they pass legislation saying that this is a travesty and that it should never happen and it's banned now, their contracts don't mean anything. I mean, it's the federal government. They can basically do whatever they want to if they really want to. So, I mean, if, say, we have a Bernie Sanders administration and he passes it through, I mean, if he goes to the attorney general and he says, you know, I want to draft legislation, I want to get this ready, I mean, you know, that could be done. I'm not saying it could be done like in a snap of a finger, but definitely within a year. I think 3 years is a little too long of a time. You know, that's 3 years that over 100,000 people are sitting in jail when they shouldn't be.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I'm not arguing with you there, but we are talking about a whole lot of people, and you know that the red tape that you had to go through, just like the reason there haven't been many people released by the Obama administration or the Justice Department since they so-called reformed the crack cocaine disparities. There hasn't been a lot of people who have benefited from that reduction. So in time,
I actually feel bad for the Obama administration and President Obama, because anything that he tries to put through, you know, he's getting slammed on. If he doesn't do it, he gets slammed on it. If he does do it, he gets slammed on it. You know, I know that this is probably an issue for him that he would really like to try to work out, but, you know, if President Obama even touches this issue, Fox News and, you know, the conservatives and everybody's just going to go up in arms.
Yeah, but they've been doing that for his entire administration. Would you not agree? that's an automatic right there. So I wouldn't too much be caring about what those folks have to say. But he also was in the last year or so. What does he have left? A year and a half.
About a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. So
this is the fourth quarter, man. This is where he needs to go out and start going, you know, legacy shopping and throwing Hail Marys and trying to get the last things done that he couldn't before. I mean, you know, President Obama did a lot of really good things. He's made a couple mistakes, but I mean, with prison reform and this stuff, I mean, you know, he's actually pardoned less people than, you know, I think the last two administrations combined. So, I mean, he really needs to, you know, put more effort into, I think, that side of it. And I think on, you know, he just went to a prison a couple of weeks ago. And I think that his agenda, you know, he has to spend his political capital a little bit wiser. But I think that this is an issue that for him, if he did, it'd be amazing. But I don't think that we're Obama do it. I think it's going to be the president. It's Bernie Sanders.
The timetable, though, for this bill, this bill doesn't require, you know, Sanders' administration to get passed. You know, it's already been introduced. Mm-hmm. So given the timetable of how long these things take to become law, is it possible before he is out of office that this bill to abolish private prisons and jails in the United States would be on his desk, and that could be part of his legacy if he wants to step it up? I mean, again, everyone's conceding, including Bernie Sanders.
It's been, it's been my experience that candidates who are running for president, their bills draw a lot of attention, but it doesn't seem like a lot of them get through. You know, Bernie Sanders had this, and he could get a lot of support, but he doesn't have enough. You know, you have a Republican-controlled Senate and the House of Representatives. Even if it somehow did pass, you know, and everything, it would still be months and months. But, I mean, it could happen, but I doubt it. I really don't think, you know, in a presidential year, they want to hand Bernie Sanders a major legislative victory as he's running for president and probably going to face Donald Trump in the primaries. You know, they're going to want to take all the way, you know, take away all the ammunition from him if they can.
Well, then so that's why I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, I just can't imagine that, you know, being passed by the Republican House and Senate.
Well, I think if enough people demand it, if you spoke about that 45 million in lobbying that was spent in just 1 year, this is where the people have to get involved. You know, where we have to do our own lobbying efforts and just make it impossible for them to ignore an issue. You know, and I think that a majority of Americans pretty much on criminal justice reform, if we talk about, you know, with the so many states now legalizing recreational use of cannabis and medicinal use of cannabis, and so many people locked up under that, understand Oregon, besides the tragedy that they just experienced with the shooting at the community college. But they had just passed legislation expunging the records of everyone arrested on cannabis charges. So I just think that if the different groups out there, I understand, like the NAACP, I know of at least two state chapter NAACP presidents have endorsed this legislation, Justice is Not for Sale Act 2015. I know there are a lot of other groups that are also co-signing on to it. So I'm just saying there's huge support out there that I feel like it's really going to take all of these different groups working together to push this legislation through. I like to be an optimist and say it could happen. It's just it's on us to demand it and make it happen. I mean,
well,
what are your thoughts?
I mean, I definitely agree with you there that if there's going to be any kind of fight for it at all, everybody has to start shouting for it. But on the other hand, you know, and I'm not trying to make a political issue of a tragedy, but Oregon just had a really bad shooting. And the first thing that everybody says is gun control. Gun control in this country needs to be better. And today, you know, Jeb Bush, a major presidential candidate, came out and said, stuff happened. This isn't a gun problem, you know? So I even with something like private prison, even if everybody was yelling about it, screaming about it, I just can't see him handing a legislative victory to a presidential candidate. I wish, you know, and I think that if there was ever going to be any kind of chance, everybody would have to be involved. And everybody would have to make it a major issue in this country. But that would be the only way that it could.
I mean, you're a writer. You obviously pay attention to sources of news and information. I have also been trying to observe as much as possible. Have you seen this bill get much coverage in MSM, mainstream media? Are they putting together like panels to discuss the merits of this bill or anything like that? So. You know, do you think that's deliberate suppression? Because, I know people who think this is deliberate for some of the reasons that you stated. You know, they don't want to hand him a legislative victory.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there's suppression coming from the Republicans, that they don't want to see that. But when it comes to the mainstream media, I think that they just, you know, it's a dog chasing a ball. You know, whatever the biggest story at the time is what they're chasing.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a deliberate, you know, the smothering of a major issue. But, I mean, then again, I'm not at the highest levels of the media where I could, you know, say, yeah, I've been in those rooms or whatever. But, I mean, it seems to me from what I pay attention to is that, you know, you have, you know, Donald Trump's debate, you know, they all run there. And then you have Jeb Bush has something dumb and they all run there. And then you have, you know, a shooting in Oregon and they all run there. And then they have, you know, it just doesn't seem like they have a very good attention span to issues like that. I mean, I did see, you know, when Bernie Sanders introduced it, who are co-sponsored it, you know, they covered it, but they covered it and then, you know, kind of went by the wayside. I haven't really seen too much since then about it, but if I'm wrong, definitely someone out there let me know.
Well, I certainly haven't seen it, and I've been making an effort to reach out to some of the people, like, for example, New Abolitionist Radio. We interviewed Nakima Levy Pounds, who's a professor, I believe she's in Minnesota. Yeah, I believe it's in Minnesota, Attorney of the Year. She describes herself as an abolitionist attorney. She also heads the Minnesota NAACP. She's been part of Black Lives Matter type demonstrations in her state, and she has been appeared on mainstream media giving interviews, but they haven't called her yet to talk about this. So we've been reaching out to those same type of people to get them to come on, and people like yourself, of course, to analyze, yeah, you know, this particular bill. So if the mainstream media is not going to cover it, hey, ain't that why you got DavidYankovich.com, right? That's why you got it, right? Yeah. So from an analyst standpoint and a person, you know, who cares about this issue, and you told me that, you know, you find private prisons to be an embarrassment to this nation. So what in terms of your could you share with us your analysis of the Justice Is Not For Sale Act?
Well, I think that the Justice Is Not For Sale Act is, you know, a great starting point. I think that it's got a lot of teeth on it. I think that, you know, they addressed a lot of the issues that I found that, you know, basically the corruption, and, you know, they talked about bringing back the parole boards and, you know, stuff. I have to agree with a lot of it. The only thing I don't agree with, and what I said before, is the time frame. You know, you're giving them 2 years with a third year option. There's 117,000 people in prisons and, you know, everything throughout the country who shouldn't be there and could be out. So I think that the bill didn't go far enough, but I think for a major presidential contender who is trying to get the nomination and is trying to fight for people, I think that that's probably as far as he could probably go, even maybe overstepping a little bit, because anytime that bill goes before the Senate and the House of Representatives, you know, is going to get chopped up. They're going to try to change everything. And, you know, I mean, $45 million is a lot of money. And that's how, yes, much is gonna, you know, has been spent so far this year, you know, on private prison, you know, lobbying. I can only imagine if that bill hits the House, how much is going to get spent.
That's true. That's true. If, you know, let's take the pessimistic viewpoint, and let's say that it doesn't make it through, you know, this cycle, I still think that, you know, perhaps this is model legislation that type that needs to keep getting introduced. And so who knows, after the 2016 election, the entire Congress makeup might look a bit different. So so I wouldn't, you know, of course, never, you can never give up, you know, when you're
yeah, you can't give up. I wrote an article a couple months ago, and it was called "Is This the End of the GOP?" And basically what I did was I explored how the Republican Party can sustain over the next couple of national elections with alienating so many voters that they are. Now, you know, right now they have control of the House of Representatives, they have control of the Senate, but they're so divisive and they're so radical. I mean, even Colin Powell came out the other day and he said, you know, the exact same thing that I said. My analysis was spot on with his. And, you know, he said, I can't see them sustaining, you know, with the rhetoric that they're using. So, I mean, I definitely take an optimistic viewpoint that if we keep fighting for it, if it doesn't go through this time, you know, first off, I don't think we're going to have a Republican president in 2016. I think that they've become too radical and too far to the right to win a national election again, until they can finally sort themselves out and put somebody forward who is progressive and, you know, I'll even go as far as to say, you know, a little bit kinder to people. But I can't see the Republicans winning in 2016. And honestly, like the Senate, I think they're going to lose the Senate in 2016 as well. They might retain the House. And then we have a better chance of, you know, having some kind of reform. And then say if Bernie Sanders is elected president, you know, it'll be a lot more powerful of a bill if it's coming from, you know, a White House that's absolutely 100% backing it and with control of the Senate.
So you don't believe that there'll be a Republican president in 2016, but what if it's Hillary Clinton? And I have to say that the chances of this bill, even if it's introduced later, I don't see it making it as is. You alluded to, and it's been out there, reports out, yep, there for a while about the cash bundlers that's raising, you know, private prison lobbyists raising money for her campaign. And I shouldn't say looking forward, but I will be DVRing Politics Nation Sunday, which is hosted by Sunday morning, hosted by Al Sharpton, his new show. He's having Hillary Clinton on this Sunday, and it'll be interesting to see if he asks her. I don't expect it, but hey, who knows? He might ask her a real question or two. And I think, you know, that, it is the people in the media's job to be asking her about that and, you know, this piece of legislation. But I mean, to shorten, you know, to give you a question, I mean, what do you think the chances are of this bill passing with Hillary Clinton winning presidency?
Well, that will absolutely put her in a major dilemma, because Hillary Clinton has taken more money than all the other presidential candidates from the private prison lobbying. So for her to be president and have to have that bill sitting on her desk, one, she's a Democrat. You know, she's supposed to be, you know, working for the disenfranchised and the people of the country who are working class. And on the other hand, she took a massive amount of money from these corporations. So that'll be a really good question to see how she handles that. I honestly, if I was going to give it a percentage, I would say that she probably wouldn't sign it. And I would say the fact that, you know, the probability that she wouldn't sign that bill would probably be 50-50. So, I mean,
okay.
Hillary, you know, I'm so disappointed in her campaign and in her personally. And I mean, this email scandal that she has going on, that's nothing. You know, that the private servers and everything, that's not an issue that affects anything. It's just a Republican, you know, wedge issue trying to cause problems. You know, Benghazi happening, you know, under President Bush, you know, there's, I think, 47 people who died from embassy attacks while he was president. So that's not anything that's her fault. But the decisions that she's making as a candidate and the people that she is allowing to support her as a candidate is a major, you know, issue. And I can't get behind that. I can't get behind the fact that private prisons are bankrolling her, and is she taking money from millionaires and super PACs? And, you know, I mean, one person, I think, donated her $5 million. I wish I had the fact in front of me. But, you know, I mean, what happens when you're president of the United States and that one person says, I need you to sign this legislation? I give you $10 million throughout the campaign, or $5 million. Mm-hmm. How is she going to turn that down? And that's the major issue with her. And, you know, right now, for at least me, when I look, I can't imagine her doing the right thing.
Right. And again, with criminal justice being, you know, forced to be a big issue in this campaign, at least among, you know, the left, if you're talking Democrats, if you're talking progressive, you know, that has been forced on the table, forced to, you know, Republicans to a certain extent, to even address it. But I think with it being a major issue, she has a disadvantage there, you know, given not just the money she's taking now, but I mean, the Clintons as a power couple in politics have long extensive ties to the private prison industry, going back to their days in Arkansas at the governor's mansion. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's why I don't that's why I don't see Al Sharpton, who's never, that I've seen any reports of him being critical of her. I don't see those kind of questions coming from him. And quite frankly, I don't see those questions coming from any of these corporate media platforms. But it's a question that needs to be asked. Perhaps, you know, people, citizens, like We Are Change, we can, you know, get her, ask those questions, maybe if we're in the line somewhere to shake her hand or something. That's the only way I see those questions getting asked.
Well, you know, I've been working on something for a while, and I was in the military, and I had some veterans issues, and, you know, and I've never been able to get them resolved. It's been years and years and years. And, you know, I tried to contact my representatives and stuff, and basically, you know, they give you like a person in the office who has a title that's supposed to help you, and they don't, you know. Mm-hmm. So I came up with the idea, I'm going to try to get a personal meeting with my representative, not as a member of the press, not as somebody who writes articles, does that, but somebody who's just a regular middle-class citizen. So I reached out to all of them, like just everybody in the state of Florida, governors, you know, Congress, Senate, everybody. And I got turned down every single time. So I got to ask the question, you know, who are they really representing if they won't even take a meeting with a regular person? And I'm not saying I demand a meeting and come to your office and you have to talk to me. But I mean, at some point, somebody has to be like, you know, maybe I should meet with some regular folks out there to see what they're going on, or what's happening in their life. So when I see a bill in Washington, I can fight for it. But it's impossible. the only person, and this is ironic, the only person who even responded to me was Obama's White House. And I actually got all the way up to Valerie Jarrett and then the communications director, and, you know, they were talking with me about it. But in terms of any local candidates or anything like that, I reached out to Hillary Clinton's campaign and Donald Trump. I reached out to Jeb Bush. I reached out to Bernie Sanders, and silence.
Well, one of our co-hosts of New Abolitionist Radio, Max Parthas, longtime abolitionist, he has had some success actually reaching some of the top-level people with the Bernie Sanders campaign. But he did that by attending one of these campaign events and pretty much kind of, but not really, doing some heckling. You know what I'm saying? Asking questions from the crowd. And so they got him a meeting after the event was over. And, you know, he has been in contact with them and, you know, talking about this legislation and how it doesn't go far enough. And but at the same time, also supporting it.
That's as a meeting, you know, as a member of the media, you know, but as a regular person, if there's people out there listening right now, call up your representative and try to set up a meeting.
Yeah.
Just request humbly. Yeah. I'd like to meet with you and discuss what's important in my life.
Most I've ever gotten is a 20-minute phone conversation with a staff member in Washington, D.C. His office is here in the county that I live in. I called there and sent a letter. Sending that letter got me a phone call, and then a 20-minute phone call meeting with a staffer, but not with the representative. And of course, you know, this guy, he didn't want to hear nothing about private prisons and slavery and all of that still going on. He wanted to argue with me on the phone, but of course, you know, he takes his largest contributor is Wells Fargo, and they're heavily invested in private prisons and whatnot. So I didn't expect the guy to be receptive to the message, but I still got to lobby for what I want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the representatives and stuff. I mean, I think that you send the whole reason why we have this country, the very foundation of this country was because, you know, we were being taxed by the British without representation to government. And now with the technology and, you know, auto emails and auto rejection forms and even auto pins, you know, you can't really reach anybody like you should be able to. The only way you can is like what you're doing right now. You know, you're on the radio. You know, you're building up a voice, and, you know, you're going to the event and really getting in their face, you know, and that's how you do it. You know, you have to really be vocal about things that have any kind of change happen. If there's anybody out there who wants private prison to, you know, go away and this lobbyist stuff to happen, you know, you got to be vocal. You got to really make some noise about it.
So, what are some of the other things that, we can expect to hear from you in terms of your writing? I understand, you know, since you wrote the article about the private prisons embracing corruption to boost profits, you've had another article come out. So what is that about?
Second article, well, the one right after that was Speaker Boehner resigned, and it was a continuation of one of the first articles I wrote with the Post, and it was about the end of the GOP, and it was talking about sustaining, you know, considering all the things that are happening. And basically, the Speaker of the House, the most powerful Republican in the country, number three to the presidency, was just booted out. There's radicals in Congress and, you know, the Republicans, they booted him out because they thought that he wasn't helping their agenda. They thought that he was helping the Democrats and that he helped pass healthcare, actually, was one of the big things that I've read, which is ironic to me. There was a government shutdown, almost two of them. You know, there were two Supreme Court lawsuits. Mm-hmm. There was over 50 legislative agendas against it, but mm-hmm. he didn't do enough.
Right.
So basically the article, you know, it was about the Republicans throwing out their top guy and showing once again how radical they become and asking the question once again, how long can they continue and getting more and more radical?
Are
more
they
and
imploding?
More. I'm sorry?
In your estimation, are they imploding?
Oh, I think that they're imploding. I think they're being hijacked. You know, you have a really conservative wing, and I think that they're taking over the party. And
talking about that Tea Party wing?
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit on me.
I'm sorry, we're having some difficulties with our system. The Tea Party wing, is that that wing you're talking about? Because I was listening to this black conservative, you know, that's what how he referred to himself as a black Republican, and he was talking about Boehner and whatnot, and he was saying, like, the conservative wing of the party, and it's like, you know, I'm like, dude, just say Tea Party. We know who you're talking about, you know? So is that the wing you're talking about, Mr. Yankovich, that Tea Party wing?
Yes, the Ted Tea Party Cruz wing, but, you know, but there's more of it than that.
Is it?
There's conservative, surely members of the Tea Party who are backing some of these more radical agendas. I guess the biggest, yeah, I mean, it's the Tea Party, but there's more to it than that. There's conservatives out there who are basically backing the most powerful party right now, you know, or the most powerful members of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's an absolute implosion. I mean, it's getting more and more radical. And that's what I'm saying. And as a general election, I can't see them winning nationally any longer with the trend that they're on. Now, if they get a Republican up there who is charismatic and humble and is able to reach out and across the divide to try to work with people, I think that they have a chance again. But I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't see a person like that getting nominated. I think, you know, Donald Trump is really showing that you have to really be extreme in your rhetoric to generate the type of numbers needed to win that that party's nomination. And but I mean, yeah, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. I don't see Ben
Carson.
Well,
what's gonna happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's gonna get to the, you know, he's gonna scream and make all this horrible rhetoric in the primaries, and then he's gonna get to the general, and he's gonna have to completely be a different person. And that's exactly what Mitt Romney tried to do in 2012. You know, he said, I'm an extremely severe conservative, or whatever the quote was that he used. And then we'll extra sketch it once we get to the general election. And that's what they tried to do. But, I mean, you ran for the last year and a half on, you know, all these extremely conservative principles, and then now you're going to try to get to the middle and say, no, you know, don't worry about that. I'm going to be the nice president now.
Well, David,
they have no chance nationally.
Well, I don't know. I'm just these people, man, the things that they're doing, and especially at the state legislatures, we got a lot of plenty red states and a lot more craziness going on. So I tell you, man, I wish what you were saying was true, or some more grown up folks or sensible people was to attain that leadership, but I don't see that happening. So I look at them being very dangerous.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, you have all the state houses and you have the state legislators and Congress. You know, that's where they're going to keep winning for a little bit. But nationally, I can't see them having another presidential election until they can, you know, change their rhetoric and tone it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, President Bush, when he ran in 2000 and 2004, he didn't have, you know, basically he didn't run on hate. I mean, and that's what you're seeing right now. I mean, they're running on hate, and the anger that I'm seeing and the rallies that, you know, the GOP's polling and all this. And, you know, you can't have a candidate who can win nationally that way. Now, state house-wide, yeah, you're going to see that, you know, but nationally, you know, there's all the electoral votes are, you know, in the cities. So you're going to continue to do this, and then you're going to get nationally, and you're going to lose by 800 points, you know, just like Romney did.
Now, before we let you go, I just want to, because we're looking to identify people who consider themselves abolitionists. And you said earlier in the interview that you believe that what we see now with this mass incarceration, private prisons, is a continuation of slavery. Would you call yourself an abolitionist? Are you working to end this, what we call 21st century slavery and human trafficking? Or would you consider yourself a new abolitionist?
Oh, I absolutely would. I think that, you know, but it's not just, you know, blacks that are getting hit with this. It's immigrants. You know, they have over, 114,000 people who immigrated to this country in prisons right now. It's more a lower to middle class issue. And it's absolutely, I would absolutely consider myself part of that group, you know.
Good to hear. So, because we're trying to convert abolitionists every day, you know, because of slavery pre-1865, without people lobbying for an end to it, without you know, groups coming together, spending resources, talking about it in the paper back then, then, you know, it wouldn't have never, you know, chattel slavery wouldn't have never ended. And I hate to say, you know, to even say chattel slavery, because I feel like, you know, chattel is just property, man. And that's how these people being treated today. Commodities being traded on Wall Street. So I again have to say chattel slavery. We got a continuation of that. So it's just good to speak to someone who is open about, you know, that I'm an abolitionist. I believe this exists and it needs to end. So we appreciate that. We appreciate that. So in closing, did you have any final thoughts on the issue of private prisons and you know, how corrupt that is and abolishing it? You have any final thoughts to the listeners on urging them to get involved?
Well, I do. I think we've talked a lot about private prisons, but I want people to really think about the way corporations are treating people. There's clauses in a lot of contracts where it's collateral damage. If a plane crashes and people die, they're covered by insurance. And I really want people to think of what the value of their life is worth. I think that that is, you know, part of the private prison issue, but it's also kind of an American issue right now. Is everything in every government contract, everything in every business contract, there's always what is the worth of a human life? If, you know, the banks put you out on foreclosure, you know, or if, you know, something happens, you're in the military and you get killed, there's always money that is involved to pay your family, to pay whatever. And these people actually consider it that. Walmart actually covers their employees under their insurance policy and they actually get money if they die. So I really want people to be vocal about not just, you know, the private prisons, but the way that the human life is treated in this country on any level. And I mean, that goes on every corporation, that goes on every bank, that goes everywhere. And private prisons are just the worst offenders, but it's all over the place right now.
We'll certainly agree with that. All right. Well, thank you again, Mr. David Yankovich. If you want to check out more of his writing, you can find him on the Huffington Post, and you can also visit his website, which is davidyankovich.com. Thank you again for speaking with us today, Mr. Yankovich.
No, thank you so much for having me, and you have a great day.
You too. All right. So that concludes our interview with Mr. Yankovich, a new abolitionist who's working to end 21st century slavery and human trafficking through his lobbying efforts and educating the public. So it's good to know that there's at least another abolitionist out there besides the ones I already know about. And you too can become a 21st century abolitionist by just joining our group, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery and Human Trafficking on Facebook. There are many different groups across this country behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. that are abolitionist groups. So find out who those groups are in your local area and get involved in this fight to abolish 21st century slavery and human trafficking that affects all people, affects all of us. Whether you are in, you know, prison or not, whether you have a family member that's been in prison, whether you're a so-called felon where you're being punished for the rest of your life, you know, for and legally discriminated against because you've been in prison or you've been convicted of this or that, you know, people, this is all designed to keep that money flowing from slavery and human trafficking. There have always been those people who just don't know how, or it's just not in them to do an honest day's work without exploiting other people, man, and taking advantage of other people and practicing outright slavery in human trafficking. And it's a doggone shame in 2015, man. I'm not one of those who likes to get into base about how old human civilization is or how old planet Earth is, or but I can tell you, you know, it's just a doggone shame that we are still living with this today. Now that's one thing, and we certainly want to stamp out, you know, the human trafficking we see where so many women and girls and even little boys are kidnapped and held into sexual slavery and sold illegally on underground markets. And I mean, this is an international thing. But what we're talking about, what's most insidious, is where you have the states and federal in the federal government or governments practicing legalized slavery and human trafficking. I talked about the UK yesterday with the prime minister delivering his disrespectful comments to the Jamaicans the other day in the practice of private prison slavery in the UK. And G4 Services are based in the UK and all the facilities they have throughout the world. And they're the number one employer in Africa. So this is a global problem. And when you have just, you know, state sanctioned slavery and human trafficking, what hopes do you have to end the so-called illegal kind? Why would any, you know, so-called unlicensed human trafficker care about, you know, you passing laws or saying this is illegal and that's illegal when they see people doing it, you know, they have gotten licensed to do the same thing, do the same very thing, human trafficking. And that's an aspect of it that we don't, you know, really focus on in these conversations about prison reform, but it's a big aspect of it, people. It's a big aspect of it. And it's got to end. And the only way it's going to end, if you and me and tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions of other people, maybe a billion. I don't know how many it's going to take, but obviously we don't have enough. So we got to be recruiting people every day and doing whatever we can to make sure, you know, that this practice is brought to an end during our lifetime. If not, we just passing the problem on down to our children. Again, Tando Radio Show will not be on air. Today, Brother Dave has some personal things to take care of, but he will be back hopefully next week. Tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time is Race Treaty, and I imagine following Race Treaty, the Lotus Place Radio Show will be on air as well at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, you can listen to some of the pre-recorded programming on the network. Also check out the new post that has been made to our new website, which is part of blacktalkradionetwork.com, but it's the help website and the website where you can view tutorials on how to become independent media producers. There was a new post made on knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com. That's knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com. You can access it through the tab on Black Talk Radio Network. But there's a new post, create a quality podcast using free technology and software. You don't even have to have any equipment. If you are like a person who gives lectures and you travel all the time and you spend a lot of time in hotels and you can't, you know, lug around equipment and things of that nature, even though some of this equipment you could easily fit in a suitcase, but you know, you went working out of a hotel, but you got a nice little cell phone, smartphone, has good audio quality, or you got your laptop and you got, you know, your USB headphones, and hey, there is technology that you can use to create a podcast out there on the road and then simply upload it to your podcast host provider. So you really don't need a whole lot of equipment. Some people spend hundreds of dollars, even thousands of dollars, man, in podcasting, because you know it is some money being made in podcasting. If that's your interest, we will hope your interest will be in having dialogue and teaching people things and, you know, being constructive, and you're not just getting into it because you think you want to make, you know, you can become a millionaire or something like that. But people do invest. They do invest heavily into podcasting and internet broadcasting. But if you're just looking to get started and then make a decision, do I want to invest more money into this? Well, look, you can get started with free tools easily found on the internet, free software. It's not that difficult. So don't let being you know, a person who isn't really into using technology scare you or anything like that. If there's something you want to say, information you want to get out, there are easy tools out there for you to do that. And of course, if you're an independent black media producer, we can hook you up with special pricing through the Black Talk Media Project with unlimited podcast hosting. That's it. That's right. Unlimited unlimited podcast hosting for a flat free fee. We can't even advertise it. It's so below industry rates. So, you know, to keep, you know, from blowing them out the water or whatnot, you know, because if we were doing this for profit, we don't want to charge less than what the industry standard is, but we are for profit. We have a special, we are a nonprofit with a special mission to help independent black media producers get out there and elevate the voices of the ones already out there. All right. So that's our mission. And so we can provide subsidized pricing. That's why we do fundraising. That's why we can charge you less. All right. So take advantage. Take advantage of all the resources that's being made available to you. With that said, I will be back on air personally. Me, myself, will be back on air Sunday night with a episode of Political Prisoner Radio. Remember, you can keep up with all the upcoming live streams, live programming that's coming on by just following blacktalkradionetwork.com, subscribing to the website, subscribing to the social media feeds, Twitter at Black Talk Radio, Facebook Black Talk Radio Network, also on Google, mostly everywhere. So yeah, stay connected, and then that way you can know what's coming up, and also check out past podcasts as our clientele, our clients and media partners grow. It is now easier to access more media just from the front page of the website. Access the podcast, open them up in a new window, even embed them on your own website. So we're just really excited about the new tools that we are able to provide ourselves and our media partners. So with that said, recognize that you live behind enemy lines. USA Inc. incorporated in 1871. As a corporation, corporations are a big problem in this country. Not only do they practice prison slavery, but, you know, they subvert democracy with money, with their billions. So there's a lot of stuff going on. Casualties are being created every day. And so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become one of these casualties, there are steps that you can take, practices that you should get in the habit of practicing, codification, developing battlefield awareness. That way, you know, when you come across certain circumstances, situations out there, in the streets, on the roads, on the highways, that you'll know how to interact with some of these people, so you know, can decrease the likelihood of you becoming a victim. All right, so because we want everybody to be safe, so make sure again, y'all check me out Sunday night, Political Prisoner Radio. Check out Race Treaty Radio tonight, as well as The Lotus Place. Peace and blessings to all. Be safe out here.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.